yesterday I did go on the internet, and I saw a number of news articles. That's really all I go to see, but I still do indulge in that so that I can read the phenomenal plane in a way that can be helpful to everyone, because this is, in one sense, a play, and in another sense, a kind of a musical symphony with different themes that go on in each movement, and different ways in which a particular note or chord is fractally permeating through the morphogenic field, and how to prepare for and take advantage of those waves that are happening in order to accelerate one's journey, rather than to be trapped in some riptide of conflicting drives. And so the articles that I read were, the first one was of two British Navy ships. I think it was in the port of Bahrain. One of them accidentally, stupidly, backed into the other and rammed it. How many people saw that article? You know, Britannia rules the waves, no more. This was a pretty major error that should never have happened. And but it confirms what is happening in this moment. And both ships were majorly, not destroyed, but damaged. So it saved the Houthis a missile or two. And then the next article was of a very highly paid mechanic, a jet plane mechanic in the U.S. Air Force, who was fixing the motor, the engine of an F-35, right? The top of the line, supposedly. And then he went to test it, thinking he'd fixed it, but had absent-mindedly left a flashlight in the engine, and the whole thing blew up, the whole jet gone. So there's two. And then the third article was about all the things happening to passenger airplanes these days. By the way, don't sit next to an emergency door when you fly back. They tend to fly off in mid-flight these days. And then the other article was one that just caught fire in mid-flight. So if you're flying a Boeing, buy extra flight insurance, okay, and give it to the proper beneficiaries. But things are becoming more dangerous. Travel, and that's not an accident. The other article I read was about a summary of what was happening in Davos, Switzerland, in that charade of the World Economic Forum. It's this year it's pushback theater. And one has to not be fooled by the apparent pushback by two paid, limited hangout cohorts. But although it's not real at the obvious level, it does express a reality of a rupture within the ruling elite that is creating an acceleration in the activities of the currently dominant faction in order to not be overthrown before they can achieve their aims, and to do it in ways that are more extreme than those that have been pursued so far. So this will include, of course, mind control. And the Houthis, of course, are succeeding in shutting off, or at least making more expensive, whatever comes through supply chains from many parts of the world, including, of course, petroleum, but other products as well, and is creating both waves that will affect the economics and the destabilization of the dollar system, but also provide an excuse for the crash to happen and not to blame the banksters. So we're seeing a convergence of a variety of events and of, manifestations of stupidity, whether on the technical level or on the political level and the strategic and the military, et cetera. And so there's a certain sense in which it's warning us, watch out for any manifestation of your own stupidity. Not to be laughed at. Okay, well then let me explain a little bit further the metaphysics of all of this. In fact, let's turn it into a module so that at least people can go away with one last teaching. The seven goddesses and the problem of motivation. That's the theme of this particular rant. So, as those of you know who have been around recently, and we've been talking about the Kashmir Shaivite metaphysical diagramming of reality, you know, Shiva has his Trishula, the trident, and we tend to emphasize the fact that he says that there is one goddess on each point of this upward-facing trident, right? Well, that's not the whole story, okay? So I think now it's time for the rest of the story. But let's first of all get those three goddesses out of the way. The one in the central prong, the central, what would you call that? Prong of the trident, that's probably the word. Is para, and then to the left is, well, to the right, let's put that one first. Parapara, and then on the left is apara. The word para, as you, I'm sure, all know from Para Shakti, Para Mashiva, etc. Para means supreme, the supreme goddess. This is the goddess who, if you have her favor, will put you into blissful non-duality. Okay? Very nice goddess to make friends with, if you haven't already done so. Very important. And her energies are by the yogis referred to as, let me write it over here. Agora, right? We've talked about the agoris, the yogis. But what agora means is not terrible, not so bad. Ronoha, as the Hebrews would say. In fact, that's an understatement, obviously. It's not just not so bad, it's ultimate good. So, para-para means it's partly para and partly apara. Now, what does that mean? Para is supreme and apara is inferior, meaning it's mired in maya, in duality. It's that level of consciousness identified as an ego in a world of multiple conflicting powers and wills. Par opera, we could say, is the energies of Gaura, and opera are the energies of Gauratara. So, we have a goddess who's in charge of bringing you into the supreme consciousness. There's a second goddess who enjoys the duality and non-duality as in a state of kind of flicker fusion. You know, you go back and forth. You enjoy the best of both, right? It's a very gourmet approach. But it doesn't quite let go of the attachment then to the opera. And the opera is when you are totally mired in your ego mind and you believe it's telling you reality, okay? No one here is in that state, but nonetheless, even if you're in parapara, there will be times of fluctuation of consciousness. And the problem with the opera is that it includes the imaginary register, which deceives one's own consciousness into believing you're in a higher state than you're in. And then it slams you from behind at a later point. So one has to be very careful about the games that consciousness plays. Okay, but so how is it that that game then becomes a real conflict when it's obvious that if you're in the state of para and you compare the other two, you're going to say, no thanks, I'll stick with this. All right. So first of all, Abhinavagupta, after he creates this sort of original paradigm, he then says, actually, para is not, the word means supreme, but there is a goddess higher than para who sits on her head. She's not on the actual trident as para is, but she sits on para's head. And this goddess, he gives the name Kala Sankarshini. Okay? So, if anything, she is seemingly at this point the highest goddess. But what does Kala Sankarshini mean? Kala, time, right? The whole word means the destroyer or the swallower of time. Okay? Now, as soon as time enters into what is otherwise an eternal panorama or tableau, now the swallowing of time creates a different set of forces that begin to operate within the ego consciousness, the level of our consciousness identified with our becoming. So if you think of Kala Sankarshini as eating a piece of a long strand of spaghetti and slurping it in, she's slurping time inside of herself. So as she slurps faster, we get closer and closer to the end of time until we're swallowed up into the singularity that she is, in a way, right? She represents that ultimate death of death, but also death of life, of time, of the whole phenomenal plane. And as she slurps with more intensity and time accelerates, as is happening now, then events begin to vibrate in a different way. Okay? The result of her activation, awakening, or let's say entering with her sponda, her vibrational frequency, into the phenomenal matrix produces a number of effects. And one of those effects is the precipitation out of these three goddesses, another goddess, it's actually the fifth, because she is the fourth, and this goddess is known as Rodri. Rodri, as you probably can tell, is the feminine form of Rudra. And Rudra is a name for a certain aspect of Shiva. And it's particularly that aspect that governs destruction on the real one plane. But if we wanted to identify Rodri more with more pinpoint accuracy, how I would define her is she is the goddess of oppositional nihilism. Okay? Oppositional nihilism, I would say, is the theme that is now dominant within the fractal field of the ego and of the macrocosm at the global political, military, economic level, etc. So, but the place that I think we should look at it is, how does it affect you as an ego?